This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
All right, no better place to find a Hall of Famer than in Canton, Ohio, site of the Hall of Fame. Let's get right to him. We should reintroduce ourselves first since we're not the regular crew. Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, it's Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. But here he is, Alex Marvez, Sirius XM NFL host, sporting news as well. It's been a long time, brother. How are you?
It has been. I'm so glad to be back. Start of football season. That means TSN 1050 remembers my phone number, which I truly appreciate that. But you guys have such iconic voices that there really is an introduction truly needed to our audience here in Toronto.
Well, you
spoken like a Hall of Famer.
Yes. I've either set the impossible bar for you, Alex, or I've given you the ultimate compliment. One of the two. You can take it either way.
I appreciate that. I spent last night drinking with some Hall of Famers and had a great time. You know, I mean, it was amazing, seriously. I mean, look, this is where the little kid comes out in you. Like, I was the biggest Dan Fouts fan growing up. And in fact, Dan actually put out a restraining order against me after I met him a few years ago, and we were able to get that resolved. So we hung out last night, which is just, you know, bucket list stuff, right? I mean, you got that. Dwight Stevenson spent, you know, 30 minutes talking with him at our table. Bill Polian, you know, my radio co-host, picking his brain. Norv Turner and his wife joining us. I mean, it was so cool. Terrell Davis, LaDainian Tomlinson come in the bar, you know? I mean, it was just, it's just such a neat deal to rub elbows with these guys. And it just makes you remember why you're a football fan to begin with. And I think that's what I love coming here each week. It's like manna for the soul for what my profession is.
Well, and it's a great way to kick off the season, right, in its own way. And we're still about a month away from games that truly matter. But a great way to kick off festivities. And so, I mean, Alex, I don't want to spend too much time on the preseason nitty-gritty. Because it seems to be an annual conversation, and we sometimes wonder, do these teams play too many preseason games? Well, the Cowboys go out there last night. They play essentially nothing but subs, but somebody who did get some starts last year, cornerback Anthony Brown, does play last night and goes down with a hammy injury. You play essentially one starter, and he goes down. That's some bad luck.
Well, I mean, and that's, you know, listen, that's the big thing about the preseason games, right? You keep your fingers crossed that, you know, something, you know, is not going to happen to one of your players. But listen, it's so quirky. Every time you step on a football field, there's a risk. You look at Forrest Lamp, you know, Anthony Lynn, his coach at the Chargers, saying this guy tore his ACL in a non-contact situation. You know, you had a weird situation this offseason with Teron Armstead, the Saints left tackle. He's doing a bag drill. He's just hitting a bag with his arm, and he blows his shoulder out. You know, I mean, those types of things can happen. And, of course, the situation in South Florida with Ryan Tannehill, whose knee never seemed surgically sound or structurally sound to begin with. The Dolphins had hoped that he could avoid surgery, but now they're looking at a situation because they didn't operate on that partially torn ACL last year that he might have to undergo a reconstructive procedure and miss the season. So I just think these injuries can hit. You just try to just keep your fingers crossed. And the other thing is, when it comes to soft tissue injuries, you know, a lot of teams, you know, use technology to try to monitor, okay, how many reps is this guy getting? You know, they put a heart monitor on him. You know, they try to, you know, measure their hydration level. Some teams actually, you know, take urine samples a couple times a day to try to just make sure that a guy is getting enough, you know, hydration, enough fluids, so to prevent some of those tears and tweaks that can happen. So, you know, but even then, those teams can sometimes still get racked by injuries. But where it kills you is when you start losing different guys at different positions, like the defensive line, what's happening with the LA Rams, Aaron Donald holding out, Dominic Easley tearing his ACL. That means more reps for the other defensive linemen, and that can increase injury rate. And if you get hit at one position hard in the preseason, it can have a true trickle-down effect on your entire roster.
Alex Marvez is our guest on Overdrive, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app. You bring up Ryan Tannehill. Dolphins fans out there, if there are any, and I do know a couple myself, so I'll ask on behalf of them at the very least, where do they go here, Alex? Kaepernick's name has come up. Jay Cutler, the broadcaster, his name has come up. Could it be either of those guys, or could it be Matt Moore, their backup?
Well, and we got to throw Brock Osweiler in this mix simply Ooh. Because he worked with Adam Gase with the Denver Broncos and is familiar with Adam's concept. So I don't think that's completely off the books, you know, especially if the Browns don't think he's going to help them and maybe willing to pick up some of the base salary. Because it is a heavy hit, and the Dolphins aren't really prepared to carry that much money at the quarterback position. So they'd have to find a way for the Browns to pick up some of that. I think Jay Cutler is the most viable option, but Jay doesn't play for free. And that's part of the challenge here as well. If you're a team that knows, okay, I've lost my starting quarterback, I need to get someone in. Well, you know, what does Jay Cutler want to play for? $14 million, $15 million for the season? I mean, that's what he was making in Chicago, right? I mean, even more than that. So why would he take a pay cut? Why would he leave the Fox booth? I mean, he voluntarily walked away from playing football. So you got to come up with a price tag. And as for Colin Kaepernick, well, as we know, that's a complicated situation. But I really think, though, that, look, when it comes to the team management there, Stephen Ross supported any player that wanted to have a national anthem protest last year. If they wanted to take a knee, put a fist in the air, whatever they wanted, Stephen Ross was okay with it. So he wouldn't be the guy that would be keeping the team from signing him. But I just don't know if they think that Colin Kaepernick is good enough, Adam Gase and company, to truly run this offense as effectively as, you know, someone else out there. So, and of course, then you also know you bring someone like this in the locker room, you draw an awful lot of attention to him. You can maybe even divide a team. Guys start moving behind Colin rather than Ryan Tannehill or Matt Moore, however it is. You start to undermine a starter. I mean, it just, this is it's a very polarizing situation with Colin Kaepernick, and of course, it's a bed that he made himself.
But just staying on the Cutler track for a second, what was the reality, Alex, about a guy like Cutler in the locker room, right? Because we see him on camera, and he got pegged as this generation's Jeff George, the right. bad body language guy, the pouter, the frowner, that sort of thing. How was he perceived internally, either in Denver way back or Chicago? Was a lot of that blown up, or was it real?
Well, I can tell you this, in Chicago, and this was part of the brilliance of Adam Gase, and one of the reasons that he quickly became a head coach, was that he brought Jay Cutler back. He had Jay reach out to people in the locker room. You know, he challenged him, you know, to become a bit more social. And he'd have fun with Jay. I'll give you an example. They'd be showing film, right, you know, showing video of different plays. They'd put up, like, this formation, that formation, and then they would go to the Smoking Jay Cutler website and show a photo of Jay Cutler smoking a cigarette. And, of course, it cracks everyone up, right? And Jay just, you know. But it brought out some personality in him. Then last year in Chicago, the Bears screw it up. And what they did was when John Fox, you know, took him out early in the season because he wasn't playing well rather than sticking with him, and Jay went right back in his shell, and that was it for Jay Cutler in Chicago. I think that, you know, he would be welcomed in South Florida just because they would look at him as like a guy that's helping to save the day there. And I know that he'd have the full support of Adam Gase. That's why I think it could work. Jay played good football under Adam Gase. You know, but Adam was super excited about Ryan Tannehill, and I feel for him. Obviously, you can tell I'm a huge Adam Gase fan, and just he really thought that he could make Ryan Tannehill into a Super Bowl quarterback, and I just don't know if he's going to have that chance this season. Things not looking good, you know, from what my people tell me about the prospects of Ryan playing in 2017.
Okay, so what is the reality of the damage of Tannehill not being available to the Dolphins? Because we all agree that this is New England's division still. I mean, Alex, I've talked to some people who think that the Patriots may be close to as good as the 16-0 team from a decade ago. Would you go that far?
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge trickle-down effect on the rest of the AFC because there was only one team on paper that really looked like they could contend with New England for the AFC East crown, and it was the Dolphins.
Right.
And now without Tannehill, well, okay, so then New England, if they rolled a 14-2, 15-1, whatever it is like that, well, they're not leaving Foxborough again. You know, and is there another AFC team that can put together as good a record as the Patriots, especially knowing that New England is going to be facing some really subpar players in 2016, especially at the quarterback position? I mean, beside Tom Brady, the second-best quarterback in that division without Ryan Tannehill there is Tyrod Taylor. And I don't think he scares the New England Patriots. So, yeah, I mean, it just moves the Patriots that much closer to a Super Bowl title and closer to an NFL record, ninth division crown, ninth in a row, if, you know, Tannehill is gone.
With Alex Marvez, a SiriusXM NFL host, also with the Sporting News. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. And Alex is with us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. So Mike Tomlin gets a contract extension through 2020. If you want, Alex, if you want an organization a franchise in the National Football League that emotes stability. You don't have to look any further than Pittsburgh, do you?
Right, and you know, it's amazing. You go back to 1969, and what a disaster the Pittsburgh Steelers were. I mean, I was talking to Joe Green today and how, you know, he came up there the first time. You're joining a bad team, and he was stunned because they charged for parking your car downtown, which the small town in Texas he came from, you could park downtown all you wanted, and there were no need to pay for parking fees or anything like that. But ever since Chuck Knoll in 1969, it goes from Chuck to Bill Cowher, Bill Cowher to Mike Tomlin, and that is it. And when you have that type of stability, you know, this helps the front office so much because they know these are the types of players that Mike Tomlin's looking for from an X and O standpoint, from a personality standpoint. And we know the type of systems that Mike's coaches are running. Thus, we can marry our draft picks, our free agent signings, with what the coaches want. And that's a tremendous thing for the Steelers. Now, the big question becomes, and this is a positive, I think, for them in terms of keeping Ben Roethlisberger maybe going beyond this season, because Big Ben has talked, you know, no secret, he's talked about hanging it up, and this might be the last year for Ben. But if he knows that Mike Tomlin's going to be his head coach and he's going to be there for years to come, I think that encourages Ben to say, you know what, I love football. I'm in a good situation here with a coach that I trust, so I'm going to continue to play for him. But, hey, it's what good franchises like the Steelers do year after year. They may not always win it, but they're usually in the playoffs. They're consistent. They're good. And Mike Tomlin deserves a lot of credit for that.
Alex, why do they get to do that and no one else does? And I mean almost in all of sport. Hey, in the corporate world, you don't see the 20-year CEO or 25-year CEO anymore. It's changed so much, and I always tell people it's a defined term job. The head coaching is going to last this long. Why is it different in Pittsburgh?
You know, it's interesting about that, too, that they would have never found, you know, Mike Tomlin if it weren't for the Rooney Rule itself. And that is a rule that was pushed by Dan Rooney, saying that for every head coaching position in the NFL, one minority candidate must be interviewed as part of the process, because guys were getting shut out from the process and the NFL wasn't happy about it. They were trying to promote minority advancement, and in a league where more than 70% of the players are African American, one can understand why that's the right thing to do, the smart thing to do, and the fact that there were so many bright football minds that were untapped because owners, you know, who are predominantly white males just weren't hiring guys of color, and just to be quite frank. So, you know, Tomlin really wasn't even the front runner for the job going in. You're talking about Russ Grimm and Ken Whisenhunt were those two guys. They interviewed. Russ Grimm thought he had the job, and really Wiz sort of did too. But they said, you know what, if we're going to hire Mike Tomlin because he interviewed just as well, and what does it say about us as a team if we push for the Rooney Rule and then don't give a minority candidate a chance to play? You understand what I'm saying? So it's a very interesting thing how that played out with them. But, you know, Bill Cowher could have still been there. You make the right hire. You know the guy. You just have a feel, and that's it. But look, it may have gotten ugly with Chuck Knoll. And the Steelers took it because at the end, you know, they had to let him go because the whole program was falling apart as he was getting older. And let's not forget, in the case of Bill Cowher, had they parted ways with him, no one would have been stunned after a couple poor seasons until Ben Roethlisberger comes along. But this guy lost in big game after big game, championship game, Super Bowls, et cetera, and then finally got a Super Bowl title. And it was because the Steelers showed patience, you know, the same type of patience I really believe that Mike Brown shows with Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati, another coach who's allowed to stay as a CEO for as long as he has.
And I think it's a huge factor, and I think the players in the locker room know it, because players know when they can get a coach fired. And it seems like in Pittsburgh, no one thinks that, so they just don't worry about it, and they go out and play.
Right, exactly. And the interesting thing, too, is that the Rooney family, and you know, the late, great Dan Rooney did this, his son Art does this, they're around. I mean, listen, the NFL, they say family. Look, you're a family member as long as, you know, you're able to play, right? And then at that point, you become, you know, expendable at some point because you're not going to play forever. But they've kept players on their team a year or two past their shelf life because of what they meant to team chemistry. I mean, and the people there are always around. It's not like an absentee owner that trusts others to run. For the Steelers, football is family, and guys really feel comfortable. They want to be there. They don't want to sign other places.
Well, and Alex, the most beautiful thing to me about the NFL, player salaries are paid by the television deals before you kick off in week one. If you are a well-run organization, chances are you're going to have consistent success, right? If you've got a meddling owner, some incompetence, you're going to continue to struggle. And we can list out on one side some organizations, some franchises that have been very good for a long time. Patriots and Steelers are prime examples. We can look on the other hand and see some of the same franchises struggling year after year after year.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, first it starts at the quarterback position, right? You need to have that guy. And when you look at a team like the Cleveland Browns, I believe it's, what, 26 different starting quarterbacks since 1999. Ryan Tannehill, the 17th different starting quarterback since Dan Marino's retirement for the Miami Dolphins. I mean, that's the first thing is having that. You know, then you have organizations that are racked by infighting sometimes. Maybe a coach and general manager who aren't on the same page, so they're in a power struggle between themselves. I mean, you get all these things and you think, wow, these are billion-dollar organizations. How can they be run like this? But I think so many owners don't really understand what it takes in football. It's a different type of mentality. And, you know, they come in and they think that they know that they can run a football business the same as they ran their other businesses. And it's really not the case. You know, you need to have a general manager that you entrust, someone who is not, you know, is looking out for the best interests of your franchise and can work in conjunction with a head coach. You know, there's no question, but I really think it starts at that QB position, and that's why you see teams that have tanked in the past couple of years, the Cleveland Browns, the San Francisco 49ers, the New York Jets, all to put themselves in position under the salary cap to at some point address this position, and I think for those squads, it's going to be 2018.
With Alex Marvez, do you believe, because Roger Goodell last week said he didn't, do you believe that teams do tank? You just used the word.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and when I say tank, what they'll do is they'll just have players who are simply just not up to the standard of elite-level players. They'll get rid of some of the veteran players who are better. I mean, David Harris, Eric Decker for the Jets, you look at all the players over 30, and they put themselves in this position. And rather than try to hire comparable replacements, that guys that maybe have 1 or 2 years left at a high level, instead what they'll do is they'll play young players. And they'll hope that down the line they'll be able to play well and you can win a Super Bowl with those guys. And, you know, so that's how it is. But, yeah, I mean, the Jets, listen, you know, you look at Josh McCown, you look at Christian Hackenberg and Bryce Petty, and you're saying this isn't a team that's trying to move forward. They're just trying to, you know, get that salary cap space available and then, you know, ultimately use it in a good way. Listen, we've seen it work two different directions on that. The Oakland Raiders, they went to rock bottom knowing they had to get there to get back to the top. And then you also have the other one, which is the new Jacksonville Jaguars. And the Jaguars were in a situation where they, you know, they tried that. And they aren't very good still. And they have a quarterback problem. At least Oakland got it right with Derek Carr. In the case of the Jaguars, we'll see with Blaine Gabbert, but I'm not holding my breath on that.
Just, Alex, to circle back to the Steelers, Le'Veon Bell, he's apparently down in Florida working out with a footwork specialist. Where's he at, if anywhere, on a contract with the Steelers?
He's not right now, and the reason is for the rules of the franchise tag. So he was a franchise tag player. After July 17th, they lost the ability to do a long-term contract with him this offseason. And the reality is, with the type of money that Le'Veon Bell apparently is looking for at around $15 million a season, that's probably too rich for the Steelers' blood. They could always just continue to franchise him, you know, for this season and next season. And if he misses their offseason work and he misses their training camp, then, you know, so be it. The thing that they have to worry about, again, and I talked about it earlier, those soft muscle tissue injuries. You know, I talked to Les Snead, the Rams general manager, and he told me it takes 10 days for a player to really, truly acclimate themselves into football mode once the pads come on. Well, how careful are you going to be with Le'Veon Bell when he comes back? You got to, you know, and you have to hope that he does end his holdout at some point before the start of the regular season so you can plan on him playing. I don't think he's going to miss paychecks. I really don't, because ultimately he's making too much money. You can't leave it on the table. But he could stretch this thing out, not show up till week four of the preseason, and then maybe even put himself in a bad spot, to be quite honest, because he's only playing on a one-year deal. You know, he can do all the footwork specialty and all that sort of stuff he wants, but there's something to be said about playing in pads, what comes with football practice, and needing to have some of that before the start of the regular season.
Okay, I asked a good friend of ours, John Crick, last week for a surprise team this year, maybe an under the radar team that emerges. I'm going to ask you the same question. Who do you think jumps up and becomes of consequence this year, maybe even makes the playoffs and perhaps makes some noise once there?
I'm going to say in the AFC, I like the Tennessee Titans, and I don't think they're a surprise anymore going 9-7, but I really think that they put together a pretty darn impressive roster. I love the way that they address their secondary. Marcus Mariota, an emerging player. They've got him really surrounded by a great cast of characters, you know, on the offensive side of the ball. So I think that could be a 10-6 type of team, and one that can give teams some trouble because they like to play nasty football. I mean, they like to run with DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. So, I mean, this is January football that often succeeds. You know, I sometimes I get colored a little bit by when you go visit a team and you look around and you think, this one has potential. For the Los Angeles Rams, if Aaron Donald comes in and gets his long-term deal, however that situation plays out, I think they're going to be better. Now, are they playoff better? Well, San Francisco is not great in the division. Arizona, I think, is a declining team because of age. And you got Seattle. And I think Seattle's a team that could have a really good year this year. But the Rams, I think, can make some hay. I mean, Sean McVay, he knows offense. He knows what to get out of Todd Gurley. And I talked to Todd. I have a story up at sportingnews.com about it. He's aiming for 1,500 rushing yards, 1,000 receiving yards. No one's ever done that in the NFL. But he feels like Sean McVay can put him in those positions to have that thing happen to them. So you've got that situation with him and Jared Goff. You know, they've given him some better weapons. It's a much better offensive line. We know Wade Phillips can coach defense, and they've got some talent there. So I think the Rams are a team that can finish close to 500, maybe a game above, and get in that postseason mix.
Love it, brother. Great to have you back. Great to have the NFL back.
Thank you so much. Can't wait again to do it all season. Guys, be good.
Bet. Alex Marvez of SiriusXM Radio and The Sporting News. He joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Visit mapletoyota.ca. The Blue Jays. Yes, the Blue Jays. Making roster moves. And an interesting one at that. Dave and I will tell you about it on the other side. And throw some theories around as to why they may have decided to go down that particular path with that particular pitcher. Stay with us. Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur, Dave Pullen, it's Overdrive, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app. Pooley's checking out the GPS during the commercial breaks. How many roads are you not advised to drive down to try to get home here tonight, Pooley? 401?
It stops right after you get out of the parking lot. Channel 9 Court is the only clear road.
See, it's pouring rain outside, so you can't walk home. You'll get soaked if you
Where's
do that.
Where's Big Green when I need her?
Big Green.
Big Green would have been a great call today.
Can you imagine Big Green out there?
Yeah, a mere 40 kilometers it is for me to work.
You'd be a little wet, though, by the time you got home with the weather being what it is.
Right down the lake shore. Right down the lake.
We'd have to get to the lake shore first, though.
Yeah, but down here, you go down McCown Road, right by Scarborough Golf and Country Club to the lake shore, pick up the lake shore there.
Feeling a little adventurous. Right, you could zip over to Kingston Road, shoot all the
Zip
way down.
Right down, little bike path.
Mm.
That might be the call. That might be faster than driving tonight, Scotty.
See, I'm counting
Why
on...
Why the attitude? Why? The rain is one thing. Actually, I think people drive better in weather because they actually pay attention. Adjoa one day said, I turned the weather on, she said, the sun's causing a problem today. How could the sun cause a problem for weather? So I do have a feeling that
the sun
in a light snowfall, people actually pay attention more. They don't text and they focus on driving. On a clear day, when the traffic slows, you look down, everyone's looking down at their phone.
What's your biggest, let's do this. Because you know what? I know the cottage goer is sitting there listening to us right now.
They're not happy.
He or she is living it. What's your biggest traffic pet peeve? There's so many of them.
Yeah, brake lights. Unnecessary use of brake lights. I think it causes more issues than anything else. When you watch, because when you see brake lights, you have to at least think and evaluate what that person's doing. More people touch their brakes for no reason.
Yeah, the little love tap.
For no reason, though, because they're not paying attention. And so then they click in and hit their brakes when they have 200 yards to the car in front of them. So the minute they do that, they cause a chain reaction. Unnecessary use of brake lights. Unequivocally, the number one problem with traffic in Toronto.
I'm going to sound like
that's profound.
Such
that's a profound statement.
the crust bag, but this is how far I've gone with this, Pooley. I will actually look at the car ahead of me if it's tapping the brakes or doing anything that would be considered abnormal.
Chasing down?
No. I'm not a tailgater. I'm not a horn honker or anything like that. But I will look to see if I can see into that driver's rearview mirror.
See if they're texting.
And so often you see them looking
down,
straight down. And that just gets my blood boiling.
So I got hit last year in the 401 coming to work. Clear day. Outside lane. It was a Saturday. I think I was coming in for maybe TH2N. So, you know, 6 o'clock at night. Clear, beautiful day. And outside lane. And going, you know, I don't know, maybe 40 or 50 kilometers an hour. Not even 30 kilometers an hour. Guy hits me from behind. Now, I watch the car behind me, okay? And after 10 minutes or so, you get comfortable and say, okay, he's fine, right? You're not overly watching him because I always leave myself enough space. Hits me, gets out and says, sorry, I was texting. I said, did you just actually say that to me? Did you just actually look at me and say, sorry, I was texting? And then he got all rattled, right? And he was like, well, oh. I had been texting, but I had stopped.
He's starting to count the demerits and the fine.
So not a scratch on my truck, and he was pretty dinged on his side. So I said, power to you. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
Got out of there.
Well, my aunt and uncle.
Sorry, I was texting.
My aunt and uncle got T-boned on a residential street about a year ago. So we're talking a residential street, which means 40 to 50 clicks an hour. This is not, relatively speaking, a high rate of speed. Their car was totaled, and they were both in physiotherapy for months because of the aches and pains and some of the stuff they went through because Buddy was texting. And how close are you to...
Yeah.
But I got a bunch of them, Pooley.
You actually have to look at the car beside and honk and tell them to put it away.
Right.
Way too many people.
But there's
way too many. You would think with all of the, you have to respect it more than that.
But there's also this thing now, and people will tweet about this. You're second in line or third in line at a red light. Whether you're going straight or left doesn't matter. But you're second or third in line. And that first car, the light turns green, and it's not moving.
Particularly when it's an arrow turn.
An arrow turn. And you know, and
there's
some of these
cars going through.
And some of these and some of these bloody intersections, that arrow is not up for very long.
Nope.
And if you're familiar with the area and you know that it's a long wait, green that way, it's another long one with the arrows in green going.
I've
the
seen
other
guys
way.
Miss that first one. I've seen cars just miss the first one.
Soul crushing. Soul crushing. But the debate that I've often seen on Twitter is there seems to be more anger at the horn honker, second or third. They're calling that a bad move on
the texter.
And my response always is, if you are missing the arrow or the green light, it's because you're not looking at the light, which means, what are you doing? I mean, nobody's changing the radio station so much.
You can just see it happening.
Texting.
You absolutely see it happening on the road. So what's your biggest pet peeve?
Oh, I got a bunch of
them. Is there
a
list here?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just gave you one there. That's a big one. Because I do think that there's a grace period on the horn. You do...
There's a way to honk the horn, too. There's a little tap-tap that's okay.
You go right into a couple of steamboats. And if a couple steamboats go by, then I think it's fair game. You don't ride the horn. You don't show them up. But you give them a little love tap
to let
them know you're there. So there's that. The other one is the passing lane stuff.
Get out of it.
Here's the deal, and I don't want to start advocating for doing anything that you would consider breaking the law, but I'm just going to throw numbers out there for the sake of example.
Analytics of traffic.
PDOs
by Scotty Mack.
And Corsis and Fenwicks and WARs and BABIPs and all
winds
that stuff.
Above replacement may be very apt.
Yes. Lane changes above replacement. The number of times the center lane is the passing lane on the Don Valley Parkway. So
that is such a tough road, though. There are so many bends in that road.
Right.
That is a challenging road on the best of days.
Yeah.
It's a hard road. Just is.
Yeah. The thing is, though, Pooley,
It's a good road. It's just a hard road to drive.
If you're doing 120 and there's nobody to pass, do 120 in the center lane. If you're doing 100 with a little more volume and you're in the far left lane and you're passing people, that's fine. It's not related to speed.
No, it's related to traffic.
It's related to whether you're passing somebody. Yeah. And the number of people who just kind of cruise in the left lane.
Because they're not paying attention.
No, I actually don't think a lot of people know the rule or know the courtesy. I really don't.
I would say the U.S. is better than Canada for pulling over and not driving the outside lane.
Quebec is a good driving province.
Well, because they're going 140 kilometers.
I do enjoy the challenges of Montreal.
Move inside.
And some of those highway bridges in Montreal and stuff, man, tight lanes and all that stuff.
It's like a
theme park. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, we're all going to be on the roads here shortly.
Safe drive, everybody, on the holiday weekend.
Some of us may
be
already.
Get where you're going safely tonight and enjoy the weekend.
Speaking of somebody, actually won't be because he would have been with the team in Houston. I was going to say, speaking of somebody who was about to rip down the QEW from Toronto to Buffalo, instead he will be flying from Houston to Buffalo.
Okay, something's up there, right?
Jays made a flurry of roster moves today, including optioning Joe Biagini to the Bison.
I'm kind of surprised he still had options left.
Oh, he would not have had any used, right? Because he was never a 40-man roster player with the Giants.
Because he was
never a 40-man roster player with the Giants.
He's a Rule 5.
Which is what exposed him to the Rule 5 after 5 years. And then last year, if at any point the Jays had tried to get him to the minors, they first would have had to offer him back to San Francisco.
San Fran, yeah.
So it didn't happen. This is actually the first of his three options that he would have.
Yeah.
So the question is now, is he going back down to stretch out and be a starter?
That would be my guess.
It's been a strange year for him because he started in the bullpen. Injuries necessitated a move relatively early in the season to the starting rotation. Goes back to the bullpen and really hasn't been the same since. I mean, he's, I think, appeared in three games in the last week and allowed three runs, I think, in just like an inning plus, inning and two-thirds, something like that. So he's getting hit a lot, control issues and stuff. So
this is a mind reset as well as a potential position or role reset.
Well, I just think if you look at it too, what do you have going into 2018 in your starting rotation? Mm-hmm. You've got Sanchez and
Scrocho. I'm
saying that with my fingers crossed. You've got Stroman,
mm-hmm.
and you've got Jay Happ.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got two spots open.
You're assuming they're not bringing Estrada back.
Well, no, but he could be one of the two. Mm-hmm. I honestly would look at Marco Estrada on a one-year, relatively low-money deal as a potential buy-low, high-reward guy.
Where he's had his most success.
Because he's had, here's the thing, Dave, with the Blue Jays, and I don't think that they would go down this road in terms of big term and big money, but they do not attract free agent pitchers, mm-hmm. starting pitchers, mm-hmm. who haven't been here. I always say this to people. Name me the last big-name starting pitcher that the Blue Jays landed who had not been here before.
Yeah, now, J-Happ
is not a big name, relatively speaking.
Plus, he'd been here, though.
And he'd been here, so he doesn't count.
He knows it's good.
And they re-signed Estrada. To me, it's A.J. Burnett.
Yeah.
I'm talking starting pitchers.
Yeah.
So that's the 05,
that?
05 into the 06 offseason, and they way over, well, it sounds like peanuts now with where baseball's
relative
gone.
Basis.
But I think it was a five-year, $55 million contract. It was 11 a year, and that was right around the time where we were saying, oh my God,
mm-hmm.
starting pitchers are getting eight figures AAV.
Mm-hmm.
That's a common theme now. I mean, you could be a middling guy. Like you could be an Estrada or an Alasco or those guys. You're getting 13 or 14 when you sneeze.
Yeah.
But back then, that was a big deal.
So to the layman, why can't you stretch him up here? Why can't you push him back in that role,
up here? I think it's because he's struggling so badly.
So the mental reset. So if he were of sound mind in terms of confidence and you said, we're going to put him back in a starting role, you could take a week and stretch him out here?
Here's what I'd do. The Bisons are terrible, and their season ends on Labor Day. So with Joe Biagini, what are we, August 4th? Yeah, okay. So
it's four starts.
You can send him down there, 50 pitches, 65, 80, then the full bore, 95, 100. Make it four starts. Make it five if he kind of has some ups and downs. And by the end of August, when the rosters expand to 40, you can do it sooner if you want.
Just so you know. for sure if that's a potential option for next year.
Well, I think he's got to start some games in September.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, I think it's crucial for them to know. And I don't doubt his stuff. He had terrific year out of the bullpen for the Blue Jays last year. Davey became their eighth inning guy.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, he had a terrific year.
He was a counted on, viable piece of a playoff team's bullpen. On the flip side of it, and they like his stuff, they think he's got enough pitches, fastball, curveball, changeup, that he could be a suitable starter. My only
pause...
But
he's a 4-5 as a starter.
Maybe, but my only pause with that is the San Francisco Giants, they're having a terrible year this year. They've suddenly gotten old, some bad contracts fast. But generally speaking...
What happens when you win?
Successful organization. They've been terrific, and they pump out the pitchers,
yeah.
Whether it's Bumgarner or Kane, and yeah. I know Kane has fallen off, but I'm talking earlier, Lincecum for a long time. They had some really good pitchers, and they churned them out. And Joe Biagini, over 4 or 5 years in their minor league system, never progressed to the point in the eyes of the Giants where he was worthy of a 40-man roster spot and therefore protection from the Rule 5 draft.
And they were pretty loaded up top, though. I mean,
right.
they were loaded up.
Right. So, is there a there with Biagini? Mm-hmm. Number one, that's a big question. I still think that they need to figure out. Number two, are his struggles related to the bullpen starter back to bullpen type thing? This has not been a routine oriented year for him, and so you just don't know that at this point. But you'd like to have an idea of who he can be for you. Heading into next season.
Once again, a layman's question. Is there that big of a difference between a starter and a reliever in terms of mentality? Is it that much more?
Yeah.
And which one is the more challenging role?
Well, that's a good question. I think with a starting pitcher, what you have is somebody who has a 5-day routine, right? Pitch, play catch the next day,
play golf the third day. Yes, yes, yes. That's
depends.
A valid
point. Is it a day game or a night game?
Sorry to digress.
Second or third day, if he's somebody who throws a bullpen session in between, he throws it on the second or the third day, depending on his preference. Day before the start, you go through your routine. You're in the gym once or twice. You're doing your stretches and all those different things, and then back out there on the fifth day as a reliever, Pooley.
See, I could argue both sides of that. I could say I would really like that. But I could also say, I want to know that I'm going in every day, and I can see the challenges of that.
Right.
You don't know coming to the park whether you're going to play.
Yeah. You also run the risk in a different way as a reliever of being overworked.
Mm-hmm.
Because what if you're needed tonight?
Mm-hmm.
And we got a day game tomorrow. And we got another one-run lead, and I'm the eighth inning guy. I'm pitching tomorrow afternoon.
And then the next... that group is much more challenging than people give it credit for.
And Brett Cecil talked about this ad nauseum in 2013 as he learned how to be a reliever. Now, he'd done some closing at the University of Maryland, but he had been a starter in his pro career minor leagues and at the start with the Blue Jays. It was a huge adjustment for him, and he would always use the phrase, I got to save my bullets, because he just wanted to go out before games and play catch and play catch and play catch and play catch. Well, you do that as a starting pitcher in between your starts, and it works. If you have to pitch tonight and tomorrow and maybe even the next day, every time you throw a baseball, as pitchers like to say, it's a bullet. It's a bullet expended. So you have to save your bullet. So that's the challenge. You go back and forth like that, and I think some of the unevenness to Biagini's season has contributed to some of his struggles. But as we know, and you know, hockey players, it doesn't matter. You're going to find out over the long run, over the larger sample size, whether he can do it or not. So
what are you? Are you a starter or are you an ace reliever? Your personality.
My personality? I'm off the wall, so...
Could be wild thing coming
in
the ninth inning.
I would love... If I had heat on the fastball... had heat on the fastball... See, I don't want to have 4 or 5 pitches. I can't master 4 or 5 pitches. Give me a 100-mile-per-hour fastball...
Two pitches.
And a slider to go with it. And let me come in to rage against the machine and lead to jog in from the bullpen.
My nickname is Mariano.
Top of the ninth inning. Bam. Bing, bang, boom. Out of there. And you make more money as a pitcher, successful closer in arbitration in your early years. You don't make the $200 million contract that the ace starters do.
Yeah, I think the value of that earlier. Big closer, and I think you and I differ on this because you talked about potentially trading Osuna for, did you not? Because it doesn't impact enough innings, 200 innings versus 80 innings. I'm saying 80 games.
Yes.
That's what I look at.
Yeah, you are.
If I'm management, I have a guy that can impact 80 games in 80 innings versus being a 200-inning guy. I know you need both, but I want the 80-inning guy who comes in 80 times.
And here's my counter to that.
Shut things down.
I'm not entirely sure that the Blue Jays will have ninth-inning leads 80 times next year. That was where I was coming from. It had less to do with Osuna.
So unnecessary part.
No, I just think if you have a great... And that's what he is, a great closer with controllable years ahead. Now, the Jays aren't at a point here, Pooley, where they're able to or willing to admit this. But what good is a 35-40 save closer on a 75-win team?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can get a ton of value because you see playoff-bound teams obsess over their bullpens.
Right.
And you get a bunch of pieces.
You see plugging him into one of the powerhouse teams right now?
Yeah, but... That trade's not going to happen this season. I wouldn't do it in the offseason, no. You bring him back next year, keep him around, and maybe there's value at next season's trade deadline if the first half of next year doesn't go well and you've got to pivot.
Because if I'm a good team, I love wheeling that guy out there. I want an 8-inning game or a 7-inning game.
Yeah, you love it. Well, yeah, if you can get a 6-inning game out of it with maybe 3 arms, it's, in this day and age, even better. Looking forward to our conversation at 6 o'clock with Dick Pound, of the IOC, the senior active member, former president of the Canadian Olympic Committee. He's penned a piece in the Montreal Gazette slamming the NHL for its refusal to send NHL players to the Olympics. We'll talk to him about that and so much more to come. Stay with us. Overdrive, Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, it's Overdrive, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app. Hit us up on Twitter at Overdrive 1050 with your best and craziest future headlines for a chance to win free 2-for-1 pizza. And we'll get to future headlines the end of next hour. Dick Pound will also be our guest. Word is that Joe Biagini is going to Buffalo to start.
Makes total sense.
Could make his first start on Monday for the Bisons. Yeah. Just, it's a fact-finding mission, Dave, right? From here on out.
Yeah, officially experiment time, right? The lab is open.
Right. And that's kind of what it is when a team is very clearly not going to make the playoffs.
So your next ray of hope comes in when the roster breaks in September and you can bring up some kids and play them, but...
Yeah, and the question that you
Guerrero
have...
come up?
No, because if that were to happen, aside from it being too quick... If you bring him up, you're putting him on the 40-man roster, which means that you're optioning
him.
Start
the clock. Yeah.
And I don't think a guy like Vlad Guerrero Jr., you're going to obsess over options too much. I figure once he's here...
He's here,
unless he struggles, and then you've got to option him back. But you're not going to start that clock on him now because you might have to exhaust a couple
control
of options. Because he's probably a 2019, 2020 type before he formally gets here. Just good to have some names down at the lower levels of the minor leagues to look forward to. You're the Blue Jays. Dick Pound in the Montreal Gazette slamming the NHL for its refusal to allow its players to participate in the PyeongChang Olympics, and he juxtaposes that with the desire of the NHL to be at Beijing in 2022. We're going to talk to him about his op-ed in the Gazette. He joins Dave and me next. Stay with us as hour number 3 of Overdrive begins. This is TSN 1050, and you're streaming us on the TSN Go app.